Good afternoon, everyone. The Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Amora, please call the roll.
Chair Plankin.
Here.
Vice Chair Caruso. Ranking Member Gottlieb.
Here.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Benjamin. Byrd.
Here.
Davis. DeSegli.
Here.
Fernandez Barquin. Garrison.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Sabatini is excused. Quorum is present.
Thank you, Mara. Quorum being present, I want to welcome everybody to Justice Appropriations. As a reminder, please make sure to follow the House COVID-19 protocols as it relates to wearing masks. Policies require everyone speaking before committees to keep their masks on throughout their time speaking at the podium. Also, please make sure that all cell phones and other thing that anything else that makes noise is put on silent or shut off. Today, we're going to take up and consider 5 member bills and then move right to our consent agenda that has 20 project bills on it. So without further delay, let's roll. First up, House Bill 193, Sexual Offender Registration by Representative Clemens and Cheney. Representative Cheney, you're recognized to explain House Bill 193.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Caruso is not here. And Ranking Member Gottlieb. House Bill 193, the Sexual Offender Registry Bill, is a technical change to the statute that allows convicted sexual predators to avoid registering simply because they have not paid any court fines. This loophole allows a convicted sexual offender to move in next door to you, a daycare, or any place our children play that we believe is safe if this loophole remains open. The bill is supported by the FDLE, Attorney General, and Florida Sheriff's Association, calling the closing of this loophole, quote, a matter of public safety. The loophole allows sexual predators to live freely in our communities and prowl online without the stipulation of the registry, like community monitoring and residency restrictions. The issue came to light when a man was released from a 15-year prison sentence as a convicted sexual offender for molesting an 8 and a 9-year-old girl at a public pool. Because he did not pay $10,000 fines, that was part of his sentence, the current statute did not require him to register with the Sexual Offender Registry. When challenged in court, the ruling stated, quote, the result may not be the one ultimately desired by the legislature, but without more, this court is bound by the plain meaning of the language as used in statute. We are mindful of the state's legislative complaint, arguing a defendant could take advantage of this provision by simply failing to ever pay a fine in order to delay having to comply with the reporting requirements, but this is an issue for the legislature to address and not the courts. We are here today as the legislature that court referred to. I respectfully ask that you support HB 193 to close the loophole in the sexual predator registry, making our neighborhood safer for our children. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any amendments? Seeing none. Any questions from members? No questions. We have some public testimony. Okay, first up, David Serdar with Self Narcotics Anonymous in AA District 7 would be followed by Barney Bishop with Florida Smart Justice Alliance, and then Jennifer Pritt with the police chiefs. David Serdar, nope, okay. Barney Bishop. Jennifer Pritt. That's a wave in support. Daniel Olson is also a wave in support. One of those staples. That was easy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, any debate on the bill, members? You recognize Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for this good bill. Just want to speak very briefly. Obviously, the need for the bill is obvious. This case, the state versus James came out of my area of the state, was decided by the second DCA, and they followed the law as it was given to them by the legislature. I'm sorry to say that because it was very clear drafting error, and it's relatively rare when a court says that the legislature should correct something. But when the court says that, what the court is saying is that this is our job. They're not going to do it for us. And the court was in a very difficult place there. And if we don't correct things like this, then we put the court in the temptation. Perhaps one of the other four DCAs around the state would massage the text a little bit in order to get to what they think is the right result. But it's not fair to put the court in that position. This is just something for all of us, but for every bill that we do, to make sure that we scrutinize the language and we don't make drafting errors like this and end up with bad case law and have to come back later. So thank you for the good bill. I just did want to speak to the separation of powers issues and the judicial restraint in this matter, and we're obviously here doing the right thing. Thank you very much.
Next up, Representative DeSigley, followed by Representative Garrison. Representative DeSigley, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, thank you for bringing this good bill forward. As you know, you and I have spoke about this issue really probably days after we were both elected. Representative Clements, thank you for taking the lead on this as well. I think this is one of the most important issues, one of the most important pieces of legislation that this legislature is going to be tackling this year. The fact that sexual offenders do not have to register is mind-blowing to me today, as it was when you and I first learned of this. So obviously I'm way up in this bill. I thank you for championing this issue, and I look forward to voting for this on the House floor. Thank you.
Representative Garrison, you're recognized.
Very briefly, Chair, thank you. I want to echo the sentiments of my colleagues, Representative Cheney, and thank you for this good bill. You and I have talked about this. You know, I was a sex crimes prosecutor for many years and prosecuted these cases and know how important they are for our communities and for victims. This is the number one legislative priority of the Clay County law enforcement community. I want to thank you for bringing it, and I also look forward to supporting it all the way through. Thank you.
Okay, with seeing no further debate, Representative Cheney, you're recognized to close on House Bill 193.
In closing, I'd like to thank Representative DeSigley for our early conversations when he was so supportive of this bill, and for Representative Garrison for co-sponsoring the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and members, when you vote, please make sure and speak into your microphone this time around. Representative Cheney, having closed on the bill, Mara, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso? Ranking Member Gottlieb?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin? Byrd?
Yes.
Davis? DeSigley?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin? Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello? Rayner?
Yes.
10 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. By your vote, it'll be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Cheney. Next up, House Thank Bill you. 31, Clerks of the Court, by Representative Clemens. You're recognized to explain House Bill 31.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, and thanks, members, for allowing me to present House Bill 31, Clerks of the Court. The clerk efficiency legislation contains the substance of two bills from last session, HB 591 by Rep. Clemens and HB 967 by Rep. Gregory. The House bills passed all committees unanimously, and House Bill 967 by Representative Gregory unanimously passed on the House floor. The Senate bills unanimously passed two committees. This bill today seeks to do two things. One, streamline the jury management process for clerks, making it more effective and efficient. And two, implement a simple statute cleanup to fix a technical glitch regarding services stemming from HB 337 passed in the legislature in 2019. Streamlining the jury management process is one of the many important services the Florida clerks provide in managing the jury process for the court system. Each year, juries summon nearly 2 million citizens to perform their civic duty to serve on a jury. They also administer any payments made to the jury. The current pre-imbursement method creates numerous budget challenges and additional workloads for the clerks and the state entities that are involved in that. The bill changes the way jury management costs are paid to the clerks at the local level. It changes the payment from the complicated pre-reimbursement system to a simple reimbursement of actual costs incurred. These changes will not impact citizens coming to the courthouse for jury duty or to payments to the juries. It just is a simple statute cleanup. The bill distinguishes the difference in what is a court-related fee and what is a county-related fee so that the clerks can remit the correct funds to the general revenue. These changes are not substantive and are clarifying in nature and will ensure that the clerks can properly implement House Bill 337 with clerks' day-to-day operations. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We have no amendments, so we'll go to questions. Any questions for members? Seeing no questions, we have public testimony. First up, Flagler County Clerk Tom Bexley, who's representing the Florida clerks and court clerks and controllers. Welcome, and you come up and speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Tom Bexley, Clerk and Comptroller in Flagler. I'm also the legislative chair for our association, the Florida Court Clerks and Comptrollers. I want to thank our bill sponsor again for very eloquently explaining the details of the bill. I'm here today with my Director of Legislative and Public Affairs, Jason Harrell, who's in the audience today, to address any further questions. I just want to say that we are here in representation of all 67 court clerks and comptrollers, and we strongly support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Jason Harrell, Florida Clerks and Controllers.
If there's no questions,
he'll be waving in support. Okay, next up, any debate on the bill? Representative Rainer, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Clemens, for this bill. I am a practicing attorney, and I know how important that this bill is. In fact, when I got elected, I was pulled by two of my longtime clerk of court officers, and really they've expressed their concerns, so I appreciate it. It makes our whole system run. We know that the clerk of court had to really do a lot of maneuvering during this pandemic and to make it easier for folks to have access to the court. So I appreciate this bill on behalf of them. So thank you so much for this good bill.
Any further debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on House Bill 31.
I'll waive, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Clemens having closed, Amira, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso? Ranking Member Gottlieb?
Yes.
Representative Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin? Byrd?
Yes.
Davis? DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello? Rainer?
Yes.
10 yeas, 0 nays.
We'll be reporting that favorably. Congratulations. And next up, House
Thank
Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Next up, House Bill 93, Juvenile Diversion Program Expansion by Representative D. Smith. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I'm bringing before you today House Bill 93, the Juvenile Diversion Expungement Program. This is second chance legislation for about 26,000 juveniles in the state of Florida that have an arrest on their record. We want to be able to remove that arrest so they can get better jobs, get scholarship money for college, have a pathway to go into the military. What the bill does is expands the current statute from misdemeanor expungements to allow felony arrests. But let me be clear, what this does not do is allow a felony diversion program to take that out of the state's attorneys. You're not going to commit murder and grand theft and get in a diversion program. That's within the judicial discretion of the state's attorney. But an expungement to remove that arrest off the record is agreed to by law enforcement, is agreed to by the state's attorney, and that juvenile, that youthful offender, completes a diversion program, and then they can take that off of their record so they can get on with their life. This is truly second chance legislation that I think we desperately need here in Florida. Is one step on a continuum for justice reform in our state. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that the Florida Sheriff's Association supports it, the PBA supports it, police chiefs, Florida prosecutors, and Florida public defenders support this good bill. And I would ask for your favorable support. There is a $25,000 one-time cost to update FDLE software. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have no amendments, so we'll go to questions. Any questions for members? Okay, see no questions, we'll go right to public testimony. First up is Ann Williams, representing yourself and your son, which will be followed by Alexandra Berry, which will be followed by Danny McMillan, and then Barney Bishop. Ms. Williams, you're recognized.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I consider this bill, HB 93, one step, only one step in the right direction. There is much work to do. Florida prosecutes more children in the adult criminal justice system than any other state. In 2016, Florida direct filed more youth than California, Texas, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Michigan combined. Since 2009, more than 16,000 children, some as young as 10 years old, have been prosecuted as adults. My son was 14. In a poll, 77% of Floridians believe that a judge, not a prosecutor, should decide whether to prosecute a child as an adult. Some of the reasons a diversion program is a better alternative to juvenile housing or an adult prison are: children in any system are at an increased rate of victimization and suicide. In adult facilities, children are 9 times more likely to commit suicide than those in juvenile facilities. They are also at the highest risk for sexual abuse. If public safety is indeed the issue we are concerned about, taking an already traumatized child and subjecting them to adult abusers for further physical and sexual abuse, it makes no sense. In 2012, the Supreme Court stated life sentences for children are cruel and unusual. Therefore, the more than 16,000 Florida children and 26,000 in juveniles, they will all be returning to society at some point, and public safety is an issue if we allow children to be abused by the system we have placed them in. Florida must stop inflicting these severe penalties on children. Children have a unique propensity to change. In the last few years, the evidence is clear. The human brain does not reach full maturity until at least the mid-20s. It is important to understand that engaging in reckless actions during adolescence is socially normative behavior. Crimes peak around late adolescence. However, they begin a steep decline into early adulthood. In closing, I must add that our harsh system disproportionately harms children of color. Black children accounted for 65% of youth transferred to adult court in the fiscal year 2018 to 2019. My hope is House Bill 93 will allow families to remain together and save Florida's children from an uncertain fate. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Alexandra Berry. Ms. Berry, you are recognized.
Thank you. And thank you for filing this bill, HB 93, Mr. Smith. I really appreciate it. It's time that we give our children second and third chances in life. History has shown over and over again, stripping children away from their homes and institutionalizing them does more harm than good. by having a diversion program where a child, for example, can pursue restorative justice with the crime victim, it actually holds the child accountable. Crime victims report that they are more satisfied with the process, and it also reduces recidivism. This bill is a first step for giving a better future for a child who has made some mistakes and possibly has some trauma. All I ask is we have oversight over these programs and use evidence-based practices. Florida's children and families deserve this consideration, and I really wish we had this 20 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Danny McMillan. Danny McMillan with the Florida PTA waves in support. Next up, Barney Bishop. President. And then we've got some wave in support. We got wave in support by Ida Eskimani, wave in support by Christian Miner. I'm sorry, Ida Eskimani is with Florida Rising. Wave in support by Christian Miner, Florida Juvenile Justice Association. Wave in support by George Chamizo, Florida Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Wave in support by Gregory Black, R Street Institute. Wave in support by American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, Cara Gross. Wave in support by Lauren Gallo, League of Women Voters of Florida. Wave in support by Florida Conference, Ingrid Delgado with Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. Wave in support by Carrie Boyd of the SPLC Action Fund. Wave in support by Pamela Birch Fort, Florida State Conference of NAACP Branches. Okay, we've concluded public testimony, so we'll go into any debate from members. Any debate? Representative Learning, you recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to thank the representative for bringing this great bill to me a couple weeks ago. I was proud to co-sponsor it. I made mistakes when I was a kid. I'm sure many people on this committee and in the House did. What this bill does fundamentally is it allows those kids that second chance. This is a way to modernize our system and to look comprehensively and make sure that everybody gets the second chance that I was given and many others. I was able to take that, get a career in the military, and now I'm in this room. And that very easily could have been, it could have been the other side of that coin, right? So I would encourage the other members of the committee and overall to look at not just this piece of legislation, but just smart criminal justice reforms overall and across the system. As we heard in this committee not too long ago, we're spending $2.7 billion on housing criminals in this state. And smart reforms like this one are exactly what we need to get out so we're not incarcerating 85, 90,000 people a year. And I just, again, thank the representative for doing this and proud to support. Thank you.
Okay, next up, Ranking Member Gottlieb, you're recognized for comments, debate.
Thank you, Chair. Rep Smith, thanks for bringing this bill forward. As you know, I am a co-sponsor of the bill. I do question $25,000 for the FDLE to fix the system, but that aside, I want to bring something to the committee's attention that as a criminal defense practitioner, I think is super important when it comes to expungements. As this bill allows, it allows an individual who's had their criminal record expunged to deny the arrest, to deny the diversion. And unfortunately, that information is out there in the public record. And I think that I would hope that in the future, we can have a bill that will fix that and work to erase what's in the public record, because what it does to my clients is it makes them liars. And somebody views them, if they're trying to get a job or they're trying to get an apartment, they follow this great bill to the letter of the law, they deny that criminality, but then they've seen it because it's in a public record report, and they tell them, well, had you just admitted it to me? And it makes it very hard to give advice. I love the bill. I'm not down on it. I'm absolutely supporting it. I'd love to see us go a little further in the future, and I appreciate the great work you've done on it. Thank you.
Okay, next up, Representative Rayner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Smith, for this bill. I started my career as a juvenile defense attorney defending young people who have made mistakes, who have found themselves on the other side of the law. And this bill is so needed, and this bill, I think, is the right first step. I know that sometimes we are often on the other side of the aisle on some issues, but I think that this issue is an issue that is, you know, common to all of us. And so I appreciate you bringing forth this very good legislation, and I think that it's going to set a good foundation for what we can do, especially when we're thinking about our young people and those who have made mistakes but are actually learning from those mistakes and to go on and be productive citizens. So I thank you for this bill.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no further debate, Representative Smith, you're recognized to close on House Bill 93.
Thank you, Chair. And just briefly in closing, to let people know that to Rep. Gottlieb's point, the expungement is done so that individual can legally tell a recruiter or anybody else that I have never been arrested. However, that information still remains there. So if that youthful offender gets in trouble later, that state's attorney can go back and uncover that previous arrest. However, specifically to Rep. Gottlieb's point, House Bill 95, HB 95, is the public records exemption companion bill to this. So we will accomplish exactly what you've talked about. So, and with that, I close, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Having closed, Amira, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso? Ranking Member Gottlieb?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Bird? Benjamin? Bird?
Yes.
Davis? DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello? Rayner?
Yes.
10 yeas, 0 nays.
Well, thank you. We'll be reporting House Bill 93 favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
Next up, House Bill 371, False Reports of Crimes, by Representative Brannon. Representative Brannon, you're recognized to explain House Bill 371.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Gottlieb, members for allowing me to present House Bill 371, False Reports of Crime. Section 817.49 Florida statutes currently prohibits a person from willfully imparting, conveying to be imparted, or conveyed to any law enforcement officer false information or reports concerning the commission of any crime when the person knows the reports to be false and that no such crime has been committed. That currently is a misdemeanor. House Bill 371 will amend the current statute to criminalize a false report that is made to law enforcement and defines public safety agency. It also implements more severe penalties depending on the severity of the impact of the false report, if any, on a victim, other citizen, and law enforcement. One of the practices this law seeks to curtail is called swatting, and I had no idea what that was until a few months ago when the Florida Police Chiefs Association came to me with it. But swatting has been made popular by YouTubers. Swatting is a malicious gag where someone calls the police and reports a serious situation like a hostage taking or a murder. Local officials will rush to the scene, but typically only find a completely innocent citizen caught wildly off guard. It's no joke, as swatting causes danger to the public and law enforcement, as well as diverting valuable resources away from the public. Swatting can manifest itself in a couple of ways. A person uses 911 and law enforcement response as a mechanism of revenge. They call 911 and make an egregious false report that will prompt substantial law enforcement and other first responder responses. The person claims they are a victim of a crime or they are witnessing a dangerous situation, usually involving firearms or an imminent threat of violence. An innocent party can be detained or injured prior to the truth of the matter being resolved. Persons also have been known to use 911 to lure law enforcement into an ambush. These scenarios have been, in the last couple of years, been played out all around the country. And in all instances, valuable public resources are drained. There's potential for citizens and officers to be injured or killed. Your staff analysis cites a couple of examples, one in California and one here in Florida, where false reports were made prompting a law enforcement response that resulted in an innocent homeowner being killed in California, and here in Florida, a SWAT team being dispatched and in contact with an innocent and alarmed couple about a false murder claim. It also caused a nearby school to be locked down on that occasion. I want to read you one, and believe it or not, there have been 25 instances of this since October, just in the Tampa Bay area of Florida. On October 27, 2020, the Clearwater Police Department received a call from a subject stating he had two female hostages in his basement and had placed pipe bombs in the street and demanded $10,000 and a pizza in exchange for the hostages. The caller threatened a shootout with police. When officers responded to the address, the victim was interviewed and stated she plays a game called Among Us and had been warned by a user that he was going to SWAT her. So you see how serious this can be. House Bill 371 simply amends the current statute to provide enhanced penalties in these three ways. If the public safety agency response from a false report of a crime results in substantial cost to the responding agencies over $1,000, that would become a third-degree felony. If great bodily harm, permanent disfigurement, or permanent disability occur as a proximate result of lawful conduct arising out of a response, that would become a secondary felony. And if a death occurs as a proximate result of lawful conduct arising out of a response, that would become a first-degree felony. That is the bill.
Thank you. We have no amendments, so we'll go to questions. Any questions from members? Seeing no questions, we have some public testimony. First up, Barney Bishop, not here. Tim Stanfield with the Florida Police Chiefs Association. Nope. Oh, that's a wave in support. And we have Jennifer Pruitt, Florida Police Chiefs, also wave in support. Any debate on the bill? No debate. So Representative Brannon, you recognize to close on House Bill 371.
I'll close by saying this, Representative Garrison, one that I dealt with in my career, we had a murder that happened in Clay County. It was near the Duval-Baker County line. We had hundreds of law enforcement officers out trying to find that suspect for about 2 or 3 days. Helicopters, I happened to be in a helicopter that day, dog teams. We had a citizen in our community call and say, I just saw the suspect run across the road. He's right here in McClenny. So all of our resources were shifted for hours. You can imagine the chaos and havoc that causes when a community has helicopters and dogs and hundreds of policemen descend on that community. Later that night, after we were unsuccessful in locating that subject, I was able to interview that subject, and he admitted that he just made it up. He wanted to see what that looked like, to have the helicopters and the dogs and the police descend upon the small community. I was only able to charge him with a misdemeanor, and I don't know how much money that costs. So that's a personal example that I know of, and I will close by giving you that.
Well, thank you, Representative Brannon. Having closed, Amara, please call the roll.
Chair Plankin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso? Ranking Member Gottlieb?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin? Byrd?
Yes.
Davis? DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello? Rayner?
Yes.
10 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you. We'll be reporting House Bill 371 favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Next up, House Bill 67, Public Defender Duties, by Representative Fernandez Barquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You recognize.
Members, what this bill does is basically prohibits a judge from appointing the public defender to a case where the defendant has retained private counsel, but where both of them simultaneously represent the individual. Typically, in a criminal defense case, if there is a privately retained attorney and then the PD is appointed, the privately retained attorney will just conflict off. The reason for this bill was that there was a capital case in the Tampa area, the state versus Michael Keatley, where the defendant hired a private counsel, paid the private counsel $150,000, and out of the judge's concern for a possible ineffective assistance of counsel claim in the future, appointed the public defender to simultaneously represent this individual with the private counsel. What this bill does is prevent such an action. And that's a bill.
Okay, we have no amendments. Any questions for members? Okay, seeing no questions, we have no public testimony. Any debate? No debate. You recognize, Ranking Member Gottlieb, you recognize in debate.
Representative Fernandez-Barquin, I want to thank you for bringing the bill. I think it's important. I appreciate the fact that you're working with us to make it a better bill when it hits judiciary. I think from a fiscal standpoint, I would love to see us look at the public defender procurement system, how somebody gets a public defender. I know many counties don't properly vet those applications, people who are not truly indigent. I think the system, one of the reasons that we have a bloated criminal justice system in terms of the budget in this silo is many people misuse and abuse and get a public defender, and I think you know exactly what I'm talking about, when they're not truly indigent. And I think this is a step in the right direction. I applaud you for the bill, and I'd love to see us take that next step and really examine how somebody gets a public defender and if they're truly indigent and how we can vet that moving forward. Appreciate you, thank you.
Okay, seeing no further debate, Representative Fernandez-Barquin, you're recognized to close on House Bill 67.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gottlieb. Wave close.
Representative Fernandez-Barquin, having closed on the bill, Mara, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso? Ranking Member Gottlieb?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin? Byrd?
Yes.
Davis? DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin? Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Lerner?
Yes.
Mello? Rayner?
Yes.
And yeas, zero nays.
We'll be reporting that one favorably. Congratulations. Okay, next we're going to take up the consent agenda for the appropriations project bills. We'll be voting once on the agenda in its entirely, same thing we've done before. We won't be taking up question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, it'll be questions and debate only once. You can only vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with Amara before the vote. Please keep in mind that passing these bills makes them eligible for funding, but does not guarantee that they'll be funded at the requested level. With that said, are there any questions? Seeing no questions, we have some appearance here. Nicholas Miller with AMI Kids, is a proponent. Christian Miner waves in support with Florida Juvenile Justice Association. Natalie Kelly with the Florida Association of Managing Entities waves in support. Thomas Hobbs with the Florida Alliance of Boys and Girls Clubs also waves in support. Any debate? Representative Beltran.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll be brief. I do need to make my usual qualification. Again, we have about 20 bills, millions of dollars in a tough budget year. Again, I've scrutinized these. I haven't found any blatant pork, but that's nothing against any of the members who followed these. They're worthy whether we can afford them and whether we should be doing new spending during a budget year like this. I have concerns about that. I'll be up today. But I do feel I need to say that. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further debate, before I call the vote, are there any nay forms anyone like to turn in? Seeing no nay forms, reminder, a yes vote signifies an affirmative vote for each bill on the consent agenda, with the exception of any no votes, which we don't have any on the particular bills. Mura, you can go ahead and please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Chair Plakin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso? Ranking Member Gottlieb?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin? Byrd?
Yes.
Davis? DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barquin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Lerner?
Yes.
Mello? Rayner?
Yes.
And yeas, zero nays.
Thank you. We'll be reporting the consent agenda favorably. Members, if you have any budget issues you have questions about or need additional information, please don't hesitate to reach out to me or staff, and we'll get you all the information that you need. I look forward to working with everyone as we build our budget coming up here pretty soon for the next fiscal year. That concludes our agenda today. Any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Rainer moves we rise without objection. The meeting's adjourned.